2. I see you have acquired some more animals, said Numph, querulously, the next afternoon. A jolly churl had gotten the interview with a bit of persuasion. He was not popular with Numph's office staff, and he definitely didn't seem very popular with Numph. The planetary director sat there behind his upholstered desk. He was not looking at Turl, but gazing with distaste upon the awesome mountain scenery in the distance.
Just as you authorized, said Turl.
Hmm, said Numph. You know, I really don't see any traces of this mutiny of yours. Turl had put a cautionary paw across his own mouth bones. Numph noticed it and turned to face him. The security chief had brought a lot of papers and some equipment with him. He now raised a warning talon to Numph, and then reached down and picked up the equipment. Numph watched while the security chief passed a probe all over the office, up along the curving canopy beams, beside the edges of the rug, over the desk, and even under the chair arms. Each time Numph sought to question, Turl put up a cautionary talon. Plainly, the security chief was making sure there were no button cameras or picto-recorder diaphragms anywhere about. Turl looked through the canopy and examined the outside carefully. No one was around. Finally, he smiled in reassurance and sat down.
I don't like that recon drone crashing by every morning, said Numph. It gives me a headache.
Turl made a notation.
I will change its course at once, your planet ship.
And these animals, said Numph, you're getting a positive zoo out there. Just this morning, Char said you had added 6 more.
Well, actually, said Turl, the project requires more than 50. Also, some machines to train them and authorization.
Absolutely not, said Numph.
It will save the company a great deal of money and increase its profits.
Turl, I am going to issue an order to vaporize those things. If Home Office were to hear...
It's confidential, said Turl. It's a surprise. How grateful they will be when they see their payroll and bonuses shrink and their profits soar.
Numph frowned, feeling himself on very sure ground. Turl knew the blunder he had made before. Numph, left to his own crooked course, would have enormously increased the number of personnel brought here from Cyclo. Every extra employee greatly padded Numph's pocket.
I have other ways of increasing ore shipments, said Numph. I am considering doubling our workforce with employees from home planet. There are plenty out of work there.
But that will reduce profits, said Turl, innocently. You told me yourself that profits were a battle just now.
More ore, more profits, said Numph, belligerently. And they go on half pay when they arrive. That's final.
Now, these authorizations I have here, said Turl, undisturbed, to train up a native indigenous workforce.
Did you hear me? Said Numph angrily.
Oh, yes, I heard you, smiled Turl. My concern is for the company and the increase of its profits.
You imply mine is not? Challenged Numph.
Turl laid his work papers on the desk in front of Numph. At first, the planetary director started to sweep them away with a paw. Then he sat suddenly still, frozen. His eyes stared. His paws began to tremble. He read the profit estimations. He read the circled absence of actual pay information. He read the vehicle numbers, and then he read the message, "No complaints here, bank difference as usual." Numph looked up at Turl. Staring, frozen terror crept into his eyes.
"By company regulations," said Turl, "I have the right to replace you."
Numph was staring at the gun in Turl's belt. His eyes were hypnotized with shock.
But actually, I don't care much for administration. I can see that someone in your position, faced with growing old and with no future, might find other ways to solve his problems. I am very understanding.
Numph's terror-filled eyes lifted to Turl's chest, waiting.
The crimes of someone on home planet are not in my duty sphere, said Turl.
There was a flicker in Numph's eyes. Incredulity.
You have always been a good administrator, continued Turl. Mainly because you let other employees do exactly what they think best serves company interests.
He swept up the evidence.
Out of regard for you, these will be put away where none can see them. Unless something happens to me, of course. I will report nothing to home office. I know nothing about this. Even if you say I do, there will be no evidence, and you won't be believed. If you get vaporized because of it, it will be entirely because of mistakes you make on other lines. They will not include me.
Turl got up, followed by Numph's stricken eyes. A huge sheaf of requisitions and order forms was laid on Numph's desk.
For your signature, said Turl.
They were blank. They were undated. They were forms from the planetary director's own office.
Numph started to say, But they're blank. You could put anything on these. Personal money, machines, mines, change operations, even transfer yourself off the planet.
But his voice wouldn't work. And then he realized that his brain wouldn't function either. The pen was pushed between his claws, and for the next 15 minutes, Numph signed his name over and over and over again. Slowly, almost witlessly. Turl picked up the sheaf of signed blanks. He would be very sure that none of these got loose while they were not filled in.
All for the good of the company, said Turl.
It was smiling. He put the thick sheaf in a securely locked case, put the evidence in a big envelope, picked up his equipment.
To remove you would ruin the career of a valuable employee. As your friend, I can only seek to minimize damage to the company. I am pleased to tell you that you are in no danger of any kind from me. You must believe that. I am a faithful company employee, but I protect my friends.
He gave a little bow and left. Numph sat like a dumped sack of ore, nerveless, incapable of reaction. Only one thought kept going round and round and round in his head. The security chief was an untouchable demon, a demon who, forever after, could do exactly as he wished. Numph never thought of even trying to stop him. He was, and forever after would be, in the complete power of Turl. He was too paralyzed to even think of warning Nipe. From here on out, Turl would be the real head of this planet, doing exactly as he pleased. 3. It had been a good hunt, and Johnny was going back to the compound. That morning, he had looked with sorrow at the dejected bearing of the two girls. What little they could do to clean up their squalid cage, they had done. They had tried to put on bright faces when he talked to them through the two barricades. Patty had come out of it a bit more, but she hadn't laughed when he told her she would marry the King of the Mountains. It was an old personal joke. She had suddenly burst into tears, and Chrissy, trying to comfort her, had begun to cry too. Something had to cheer them up, or at least keep them busy, Johnny thought. He got the horses, and with Windsplitter stepping out, had ridden away from the compound. Dancer and the third horse, named Old Pork, after his habit of grunting, trailed behind. Blodgett was better, but it would be some time before the wounded horse could run. Johnny was looking for deer. With venison to smoke and a hide to tan and strip, the girls would get their minds off their worries. Some of his own guilt and bitterness dimmed as he raced across the plain, Windsplitter eager, the other two pounding along behind. The wind had wiped some of his pessimism away. The illusion of freedom stimulated him. Perhaps there was hope. He had done better than one deer. He had come hammering into an arroyo and found himself within feet of antelope. And shortly after, one cleaned antelope was on the back of Old Pork.
Not a half hour later, he had gotten his deer, a young buck. With both pack horses laden and trailing behind him, he was looking for kinnikinick, a wild plant that gave good flavor to venison. It was really too early for the berries to form, but the leaves were good. His attention was drawn to a humming sound far behind him. He halted, examining the sky. There it was, a tiny dot getting bigger. It was heading either toward the compound. The horses had got, and there was not much to choose at the moment between the buzz overhead and the mutter of noise in the compound not 3 miles ahead of them. Johnny's curiosity turned to a feeling of unrest. Where was that object going? It was very low, not traveling very fast now. Suddenly, he knew it was heading for him. There had been a row of planes in a field near the compound, 20 of them that Turl had ferried in and left in the open. This was one of them. It was about 100 feet up, almost stopped. The roar was making the horses nervous. Johnny kicked Windsplitter ahead and started straight for the compound. The plane drew off, turned, and then, with a shattering burst of speed, dove on him. The earth before the horses erupted in explosions of dirt. Windsplitter reared and tried to spin away. Clod spattered the horses. Johnny's ears ached with the explosions. He turned the horses in another direction, to the right. The earth erupted in a long line in front of him. Windsplitter began to plunge in terror. One of the pack horses broke loose. Johnny wheeled and began to race to the north. In front of him, the ground again erupted. He tried to get his horse to go through the hanging curtain of dust. Windsplitter turned and tried to run away to the south. This time the plane plunged down and settled across their path. Terrified, Windsplitter reared. Johnny got him under control. Turl was sitting in the open door of the plane, laughing. He roared, moving back and forth, pounding his chest to get his breath. With considerable trouble, Johnny got the two pack horses together. He dismounted to straighten their packed meat.
"You looked so funny," gasped Turl, straightening his face mask.
The horses were rolling their eyes, trembling. But Johnny's eyes were not rolling. Had they been blast guns, Turl would have been dead.
"I just wanted to show you how easy it is to stop you if you ever got out of hand," said Turl. "Just one of those gun blasts, aimed at you and not in front of you, would have made you a pale pink mist."
Johnny had tied the pack horse lead ropes to Windsplitter's neck. He stood there, soothing Windsplitter with a stroking hand.
"I'm celebrating," said Turl. "Send those horses back to the compound and get in."
"I don't have an air mask," said Johnny. "Hate gas."
"I brought your air mask," said Turl, reaching inside and holding it up. "Get in."
Johnny had Windsplitter calm now. He took hold of the horse's ear.
"Go to Chrissy," he said.
Windsplitter cast a glance at the plane and then, glad enough, started off toward the compound, pulling the pack horses with him.
"Yes," Turl told himself, "the animal did have a language with other animals."
Johnny put on the air mask and pulled himself up into the plane.